excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
Now, if we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving. Keep turning our way, and our way
is on the road again. Welcome to this UCLA edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford, reporting to you at home after the UCLA game. Well, that was a terrifying experience to watch a Bears team go down to the Rose Bowl and lay an absolute egg. Probably one of the worst performances in the Tedford era, and there are some ones to compete against. But considering the lowliness of the opponent, it's hard to imagine another game that really outclasses this as far as how much of an egg lay it was. Let's start with a quick recap. Bears actually got lucky early in the game when UCLA turned over the ball on a fumble, giving the Bears the ball on the UCLA 30, and they quickly went in and scored for a touchdown, up 7-0. After that, it was all Bruins all the time. The Bears had an interception, they had a fumble, both in the second quarter, that led to a field goal and a touchdown. And that was after a nice drive by UCLA had given them their first touchdown. So they got 17 points in the third quarter for a halftime score of 17-7. Cal actually got back into the game on a muffed punt return by UCLA to close the score to 17-14. But after that, again, off of Cal turnovers, three interceptions in a row in the fourth quarter, UCLA was able to get two consecutive touchdowns, and then a late-minute punt that was basically to end the game. For a final score of 31-14, the first thing I'd like to really point out is that as much as there was a lot of defensive struggles, and I'll get into that, the ineptitude of the offense was staggering. Both touchdowns were off of extremely short fields. If you look at the stats, actually it looks like the second touchdown was an 80-yard drive, but really, because the punt was muffed, it counts as one drive for Cal. And really it was a muffed punt deep in UCLA territory. So really, the total scoring offense of the team was gifted by UCLA. So really, this was a near shutout by the UCLA defense. And actually, in a lot of ways, the stats for the game reflect that, of how little yards the Bears got. I mean, true, they got a total of 332 yards and 132 rushing and 200 passing, but they weren't very effective yards. And Maynard's interceptions, four of them in the game, progressively got more awful as the game wore on. The running attack was mediocre, it wasn't great, but with UCLA able to load up the box and the passing game falling apart, there was just no hope for the offense. They were not going to be consistently productive with only one unit. And none of these things, so frustrating, is none of these things were really due to any great defensive play by UCLA. There were plenty of open receivers down the field. There were plenty of open holes. About the only unit on the UCLA defense that seemed to do reasonably well was the defensive line, which seemed to get relatively good penetration through the Cal offensive line. And I guess you could argue either way that that was either great play by the defensive line or sub-mediocre play by the Cal offensive line. But actually, it was one area that Cal mitigated reasonably well, and it wasn't the pressure that they were getting that was really the reason for the Cal offensive ineffectiveness. Perhaps it was rattling Maynard a bit, but still, he has to be able to deal with that. The best quarterbacks do deal with that. very effectively. In fact, that's what makes them great, is they're still able to throw under duress and under pressure and never make the sort of mistakes that Maynard makes all the time. And what was very clear to me, actually, was because as he started the game, he looked okay. But as things started to break down, and I'm not even talking about the Bears were significantly behind, just UCLA was scoring some points, as it became clear that the Cal offense was going to have to score some points, that's when Maynard started to get into his poor play, and that's when the offense broke down. It's also when Tedford stopped calling plays that were built for his quarterback. We saw some rollouts and some stuff very early in the game, but as soon as things started getting a little bit nasty or a little bit contentious, Tedford went back to his very traditional play calling. And if there's something for me about Tedford that is bugging me more and more as time goes on, it's that he falls back into his bad habits every opportunity he gets. So the Utah game, he felt very forced to get creative, do the right things, make the changes he needed to make, and get out of his comfort zone in the areas where he needed to. And the offensive game plan reflected that. I felt like in this game, it was kind of this weird middle ground of both. He came into the game a little bit too comfortable, and so wasn't out of his comfort area as far as doing more creative and unique things. And then as things broke down, as opposed to being willing to get uncomfortable again, he actually huddled down into his comfort areas. And we never saw the sort of creativeness that we saw in the Utah game, particularly with getting Maynard outside the pocket. I'm not a big fan of he should always be outside of the pocket, but every six or seven throws, he should be. And we weren't seeing that consistently in this game. He turned back into a pocket passer. Yes, there were a couple designed run plays for him, but overall, I'd say they did not take advantage of the benefits you get from Maynard. So that was pretty frustrating to me. But really, actually, the thing that I think frustrated me even more, because to some degree, it wasn't completely unexpected to see some offensive ineptitude. Because the offense has struggled, and yeah, we had one reasonably good game against a Utah defense that people thought was okay, but there's reason to think that they might be a little bit oversold. But the overall point is that, you know, it was not a complete surprise to see the offense slipping back into ineptitude. But the unit that really disappointed me actually today was the defense. And in a lot of ways they did okay, but there was just a couple of plays that were run over and over that they didn't get. And I don't seem to be hearing other people agreeing with me on this, which makes me a little frustrated, but we saw this in the Nevada game last year, which was a defensive game plan that had the outside linebacker crashing on the running back every time there was a read option play. And that's fine as long as you have a game plan for who covers the quarterback when he takes the ball, because not only will he some of the time, he is supposed to. When he sees that outside linebacker crashing on the running back, his job is to hold the ball and run outside. And so that happened at the Nevada game over and over and over, and it burned us over and over and over. And it was frustrating during that game, but you say, okay, we got Pendergast, new to college football, new to all these unique formations. I'll cut him some slack. And his performance after that game was very good. Every time he came up against the read option, he played it right. He played it right against UCLA a couple weeks later last season. He played it right against Oregon last season. He played it right against Oregon this season. And so it was just baffling to me to see us go back down to UCLA and go back to the game plan that we had against Nevada, which is to crash on the running back every time and not have an answer on the outside for the running back. It was just maddening to me. The second half, we got a little bit of that back, but I think the defense was getting tired. One of the things that makes a great defense great is they get a lot of rest. They force three and outs, they get to the sideline, and they get a chance to rest for quite a while. And the next time they're back on the field, they get that three and out real quickly, and they get a chance to rest. They never have to deal with these bruising long drives that wear them down. But by the time this defense started to figure out that, hey, we have to have a solution for the quarterback, enough wear down had happened that occasionally the UCLA offense was able to bust out big plays. And I think their confidence was down after the first half. I think their hope was worn down with how the offense was performing. And I think they were worn down from having had those drives in the first half where Kevin Prince abused them on the outside over and over. And so they ran out of gas, and they just didn't have enough in the second half. But let's look. I mean, really, you know, half those points were scored in that first half. And in the second half, the two touchdowns they scored were on pretty short fields. They didn't have to go a long way to get those touchdowns. So I think actually the defense did better in the second half. It's just they were handed the ball on in a reasonably good spot. I guess the one drive, one of their two touchdown drives was a long drive, was an 80-yard drive, but the other one was very short, just a real easy one for them. So that was just so frustrating to me to see. The offense is a quandary. It's very frustrating. It's troublesome. I suppose there will probably be some discussion about whether Maynard is our starting quarterback at some point. I don't know whether Tedford's going to consider that this week, but he can't just keep throwing interceptions like that and hope to keep his job. Obviously, Bridgeford has shown his issues, but he has not shown this issue. And it seems that when Maynard gets under stress and under pressure is when he breaks down, and you just can't have that. You're never going to, as Utah proved last week, you're never going to win the game with five turnovers. And the thing is, Maynard should have known after the Utah game that he didn't have to force it. Perhaps those late interceptions in the fourth quarter, you could argue he was in a position where he kind of felt he needed to. But the earlier mistakes in the second quarter, there are no excuses for. There's just no need at that point. So really frustrating to see that regression. But still, we need a team that can come back from a 10-point deficit without its quarterback completely breaking down and collapsing under the pressure of this terrifying 10-point deficit. I really felt like this game, there was potential because, you know, there was mistakes. It wasn't that the offense wasn't capable. It was mistakes. It was errors that were causing the problems. And if you felt, even early in the fourth quarter, that if they could just fix those mistakes and start to get some rhythm, the team would get back on its feet. But instead, what we saw is a team that threw interceptions, a team that came back from that long injury timeout and had nothing left. For some reason, every time I've seen the Bears have to take a knee to wait 10 minutes for an injury timeout, they come back out of that completely unprepared to play football. And it's a little bit understandable, but other teams seem to manage. And really, I think this is what is frustrating so many people about the Tedford Bears, is that there's these, it's not just an issue of not having the right quarterback and certain times seeming, you know, inept in areas that you're surprised they're inept in and stuff like that, but there also seems to be these overarching psychological lack issues that put them in bad positions. And Tedford can't solve them. It's not his personality. I think, you know, he really actually is at his best as an offensive coordinator underneath a driven head coach who knows how to get his team up. He's really struggling with this getting his team ready to play. And the defense, I think, actually does a better job of that. Definitely, you know, on the defensive line and in the linebackers, they come in ready to play. And generally speaking, Pendergast's strategy, attacking attitude, gets them up and ready to play. But Tedford's precision-minded offense, kind of in some ways, it's too much like chess, and to a little bit talks players out of having a very intense mindset on offense. And so you need somebody on that team, you need some leadership on that team, which in the end has to come from the coaching staff. You can hope you occasionally have those players who will fire things up, but it fundamentally it has to be led from the coaching staff, and they have to encourage it. To overcome that chess-like, very analytical mindset that doesn't really lend itself inherently to intensity. I mean, that's the genius of the Kelly spread at Oregon, is it built right into the philosophy is intensity. We're going to play hard, we're going to play fast, and that's just how we do it. And we're going to beat them with better conditioning, playing harder, playing faster, by running the same six plays over and over and over again. And occasionally it does break down, as we saw against LSU. We've seen when teams have a lot of times to prepare, it does break down. But it lends itself to something, a high-intensity system. And I don't think Tedford's system really does, offensive system really does that. And that's why we're seeing some of these complete, just terrifyingly bad effort games. I mean, and something about the Rose Bowl fits that mold. For once, last year in 2009, that didn't happen. But we've seen it every other time we've gone down that. We've seen it in 2003, 2005, 2007, and now 2011. And to be honest, in the even-numbered years, when we go to USC, about half the time, we lay the same eggs. There's something about the smog in Southern California that brings this out in this team. Frankly, it also seems the trip to Seattle does it to them too. So, I'm just really frustrated. You know, I don't even want to talk about should we fire Tedford. You can only have that discussion so many times. We all know he's not going anywhere till at least the end of the 2012 season. And that is, even then, is contingent upon truly terrifying play pretty much between now and then. You know, he has two teams that go 5-7 and, you know, seem to have some upside and potential. The recruiting classes look okay. I think he probably even plays into 2013, or coaches into 2013. But you know, a three and nine season next year probably would result in him being let go. But we are so far from that that it's just not even worth talking about. We should be focusing on what he has to do to not be in that position in the future. Looking forward, I watched Washington State play Oregon today. This is a team that Cal can still beat with a stronger effort than they had today. If there's an upside of this, it's the same upside that UCLA had last week. They didn't lose to Arizona because they were completely outclassed. They lost to Arizona because they didn't come to play. Cal lost today because they didn't come to play, because they weren't ready to play football, and because they laid a complete egg effort-wise in the Rose Bowl. That means that there's potential. They still can come back and beat a team like Washington State next week. It'll be interesting to see what the result of the Oregon State game is. Are they on a bye this week? I'm looking at my rest. They lost to Utah today, and actually quite convincingly lost to Utah today, 27-8. So I really think that Oregon State is, although a team that generally does well against us, they probably still are a very beatable team. I mean, this is the same Utah team that we just laid the wood to a week ago. So I believe that we can still get to 6 wins if the team comes back with a stronger effort at home. And actually, if I were in Tedford's shoes thinking about replacing Maynard, what would be on my mind is, can I get him back to a comfortable place? Or is he himself lost the confidence that he needs? If he can get the confidence back, and he can really get it drilled into his head not to make the interception mistakes, to be willing to tuck and run, be willing to accept the fact that the defense may have to be the majority of the winner of the game, then I think he might be the right guy, because it's really hard to make a switch mid-season. It's going to be really hard for Bridgeford to come in and really own this offense at this point in the season, and I think you really only want to do it if absolutely necessary. Because I still do think that stronger efforts, and it's going to be a lot easier to have stronger efforts at home, that Maynard could have a pretty could finish out strong, and this team could finish out strong and get those 2 wins and get to 6-6. Would that be a success? Well, a little of it would depend on what those two victories looked like. It also would depend on how the Bears played in the bowl game. I think this game, though, will stain the how people look back on this season. I think had they come back and won these 4 games, and then even if they really died against Stanford and ASU, but did so with heart, people could just say, well, we're at the bottom of the lower half of the conference. And when we had to play, when we played the good, tough teams, we lost. Sometimes we lost a close one, like at Washington. Sometimes it wasn't so close. But we're at the bottom of the, or at the top of the second half. But this game to UCLA shows that it's more than that. That it shows that games like USC, there was something more there than just a team that was better than us. Although, I did just finish watching the USC-Stanford game, and let me tell you, that USC team is getting better and better and better, and we saw them turn the corner in front of our own eyes. So, again, I think as the season progresses, as we see USC get better, as we see Washington continuing to win games, we'd say, okay, those 3 losses weren't that horrible. We also know that ASU and Stanford are the best, but we beat everyone else, and those 5 losses are frustrating, but 7-5, that's not so bad. But when you lay an egg like this, it makes everybody question, why can't the Bears win the games they're supposed to win? I think UCLA is going to get demolished next week against Arizona State. It just cracked me up to hear the announcer saying, oh, that's going to be a big game. They got a chance there. They have no chance. Let me tell you right now, there's no way that Arizona State loses that game. Particularly because I don't think UCLA did anything special this week. And, you know, to suggest that they're getting it that much better, I guess the game is in the Rose Bowl, so you say, well, you know, maybe that could be a factor, but trust me, no, Arizona's going to come in, and unless they themselves lay an egg, they should win that game, hands down, quite easily. So people are going to look back at this season and look at that as, even if we win these last 2 games, and say, why didn't the Bears win that one? There's no excuse for not winning that. And we cannot have a scenario where we always lose to the teams that are better than us, and we sometimes lay an egg and lose to the teams that are worse than us. Inconsistent teams can survive if their inconsistency sometimes has them overperforming and performing above their level. So if we stole one from USC or ASU or Washington, then you could say, well, okay, so we stole one there, but then we lost one to UCLA. But that's not what's happening. It's not what has been happening the last few seasons. Well, the Bears are losing all of the games they're supposed to lose, and they're losing them big. Although the one good news this season is the Bears have been much more competitive in those losses. But then they're also losing a couple of the games that they should be winning, as was the story last season. So really frustrating. Again, I'm not going to talk about Tedford losing this job. I really not. If Jason brings it up in the midweek podcast, I'm going to say, look, can we just not talk about this? Let's talk about it. You know, let's have an embargo on this until game 8 of 2012. You know, because it's just not on the table. We'll see what happens. I think the more interesting question is, will there be any movement towards thinking about Bridgeford? Tedford generally is pretty slow to consider those things, but it's hard to look at that fourth quarter performance and the frustration on his face and not think, maybe I need to start thinking about other players. So, that's about the size of it. We'll see what happens from here on out. I'm sure Jason and I will do a midweek podcast as always. We've got Washington State at home. I know there's a good chance a lot of people won't show up, but for anybody who listens to this podcast, you know, the Bears really do need you. Whether or not you like Tedford or you like Maynard or whatever, it will hurt our recruiting classes if we don't go to a bowl game and if we lose games like that next week and if the fans don't show up and show support. So I'm going to be there. I'm going to yell really loud, even though it's a bad environment for really yelling loud. I'm going to do my best to give a reason for our team to feel like the home court is behind them, the home crowd is behind them, and hope for a great win. And as I said, I really do think, because this was about an egg laying, I think that the Bears can come back and win it next week, and I think that how Oregon State is going back and forth, they're not quite there, they too are a very winnable game in 2 weeks. And hopefully the Bears can right the ship. Hopefully they can figure out why they laid an egg, can decide whether Maynard will continue to be the man, and what other changes they need to make. So I think that's going to wrap up this edition of the podcast. Thanks for listening, and go Bears. On the road again.